everybody. Welcome to the Jamie Dawn Show. I am your hostess, Jamie Dawn, and I am so thrilled that you are here with me today. And I have my beautiful daughter as my co-host today. Hello, Tatiana.
Hello.
I'm so happy that you're able to join me. Tatiana's a resident therapist. And yes. She is working her hours and meeting with clients. And as you know, those who are listening, I am a 1-2 Listen advisor and radio host here. And we both now live around the corner from each other, more or less, not too far away, which I absolutely love. And so I'm happy you're here. We thought we would, when we were talking about what do we talk about, what's up for us, for the world, you know, that sort of thing. You wrote a beautiful blog on empathy, and the last few days I have been in empathy overload, and a lot of my clients have as well. So we'll talk about that. But before we jump in too much, I like to start the show by getting into our heart space and opening that field. So I'm going to invite us all to join together for just a moment. If you want to close your eyes with me, you're welcome to. Straightening the spine. With the eyes closed, it invites the mind to rest. And so offering ourselves into a place where we can just become present in this moment, taking one conscious breath in and noticing what is happening in the body. Allowing ourselves to just for the next 45 minutes or an hour or so, just to be in this present moment. And then allowing the energy as we are grounding into this present moment to rest into the heart, because as we know that where attention goes, energy flows. And so really feeling that heart center come online. You can maybe float a hand over your heart or just feel the sensation of the heart in the chest area. And just allow yourself to feel qualities of the heart, love and compassion, devotion. And just breathe all that in. Knowing that we are only one breath away from this heart space and that we can return to it at any time. And with a conscious breath in through the heart and out through the heart, I welcome you.
Thank you.
Ah, lovely. I needed that too. I was feeling a little overwhelmed before we started. I like to talk about, keep people abreast as far as what's happening in my life so that they know I'm not just this made up AI something that's sitting out there, you know? Mm-hmm. Plus, you know, it's always fun to gossip and learn about somebody else. So, you know, at the time when we're recording this, I will have been back home from the East Coast for only a few days. And so I'm finally getting back into my sleep pattern. I slept an extra hour this morning than I normally do. Yay me. But I also stayed up an extra hour later. So technically I didn't get any more sleep, but you know, what are you going to do? So I'm sort of getting back into a routine only to leave again to go off to mystery school, which is where this show is being pre-recorded for, because I'll play it on Monday the 27th, which happens to be Memorial Day. And that will hopefully give everybody some pins on the map. We'll be coming off of a full moon that's happening next week on the 23rd, sun moving into the sign of Gemini. And then while I'm at mystery school, we have Jupiter, our big planet of abundance and good luck and fortune and truth and expansion, moving into the sign of Gemini. So it's appropriate that we're being gossipy. That's what Gemini likes. It likes to chit chat and connect and learn all kinds of stuff. So lots of stuff that's going to be happening while I'm gone, but lots of stuff happening as I'm at mystery school, because we know the energy field can be really thick with some really cool stuff. So I'm excited about that. So those are some happenings What about you? What's happening in your world? Anything you want to share that people get to know Tatiana a little more?
I don't know. I had an interesting therapy session yesterday. It was quite enlightening. It's a wonderful thing when your therapist can push you and know that you can handle it, challenge you and tell you that you're not necessarily the problem, but you are part of the problem. And that we have to take a look at how, I have to take a look at how I want to navigate things instead of, what do I want to do with my anger and my resentment and my frustration, knowing that I can't change other people. They're probably not going to change on their own. How do I want to show up?
I think that's so powerful and hard. I mean, oof, because even though we know we can't control another human, we want to. Because if everybody would just line up the way I asked them to, we'd all get along just fine. Yeah. So what? It leads us back to radical acceptance because we have to accept. And this is kind of that phrase, we meet people where they're at, right? So it's like, okay, if I'm meeting them where they're at, and my expectation can't be any more than that. If for some reason they shift and they do show me something different, woohoo, I can
Right.
celebrate. But
Well, that's part of the resentment is having to meet people where they're at. When is it my turn? When are you going to meet me where I'm at? Except again, we go back to you're incapable or unwilling.
Right. So
And
what do you?
just exactly, what do you do? Just sitting in that.
That's an interesting, philosophical maybe conversation with yourself of, does that mean you only surround yourself with people who are capable and willing of meeting you where you're at?
Yes and no. I mean, when you do, yes, the like minds come together. You can enjoy each other's space. Your values line up. It's probably pretty comfortable. But that's not where we grow, is it? Which
Nope.
is why there's so many different kinds of people in the world that we get to surround ourselves with. And even if they are people whose values line up with ours, are they still holding us accountable when it's necessary? And I think that comes that that's part of being around people we don't necessarily enjoy, right? They're going to hold us accountable or hold up that mirror to ourselves. Where are our areas of growth? Where do our deficits lie? What are things that I need to be doing that I'm not doing? Or vice versa.
Well, I mean, it's very frustrating that we feel, for me, I can only speak for myself. I get frustrated because I feel like I'm the one that's always willing to change. I'm always, I cautious to say always, because really we don't want to use the words always and never, but majority of the time, I feel I'm constantly bending and being flexible. And like you, it's like, well, when is it my turn? You know? And then I go back to that concept of, well, I'm being of service. I'm here to be of service as a human being, right? So can I set aside my own personal agenda and what I think I want so that I can be of service to somebody else?
Yes. And are we sacrificing ourselves for other people to a point that we don't need to be doing that?
Right. Agreed.
It's always
Agreed.
some bullshit.
It's always that razor's edge we're walking, you know. And
Right.
in Egypt, there's the Temple of Dendera where they had the two moats, if you will, that ran underneath the temple, and the initiates would have to swim the moat. And the key was to get underneath, go down deep enough that you were able to have basically swim in the middle. So it's like the principle behind it is to be able to, just like we talk about, which wolf are you feeding, you know, to always be able to walk in the middle, keep one foot on the light and one foot on the shadow, and how you integrate the two, not necessarily negating one the other. And so just using that example as far as sacrificing or being of service without being a martyr.
So. Yeah, I think the intentionality really speaks a lot to that. What's our intention behind it? Are we walking into this consciously or not?
Right.
Are we making that active choice?
Right. Yeah. Yep. And then of course, there's always the communicating what you need and want from the relationship with the individual. And that's important as well, but being able to then say, okay, they can't meet me there. They can't give me what I'm wanting and needing. Now I have other decisions to make, you know. I was thinking about example, one of my ski buddies, her and her boyfriend broke up 2 weeks ago. And when I was talking to her the other day about it, she said that basically it boiled down to she just felt like she couldn't be that person that he needed her to be. And, you know, because he was wanting one thing and he needed something out of the relationship from the woman that he wanted to partner with. And she was looking at it from the observer view saying, I'm not that woman. If that's the kind of person you need, I'm not it. And so that's a hard decision to make, but she was saying it was the right decision for her because of the way her personality is and what she needs in the relationships sector, you know? So I would venture to say there's going to be, and I have talked with several people that that is also the case. And, you know, and I was saying how I was on empathy overload over the last couple of weeks. A lot of my clients have been on empathy overload, and it's just, it's hard. But because relationships do shift and change and break, we'll say break up or the titles change or whatever, because the more we're tuned in to what we need and want, the more we can be authentic within the relationship, and what we started in the relationship may not be now serving it anymore, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think when it comes to empathy, when we have it, we're quick to give it to other people and less quick to give it back to ourselves.
True. Tell me more about empathy, because you wrote this beautiful blog about it. And I think it's a good, this is a perfect segue into just talking more, you know, deeply about it. You know, empathy by definition, if you will, you can go into that a little bit. And I'm going to talk about it too from a energetic standpoint, because I work with a lot of empaths and how to navigate and cope with empathy overload and things like that. But yeah, give us some insights on empathy. And my first question though would be, why did this come up for you?
I started a new book called It's Okay That You're Not Okay. And it's on navigating grief in her sub title, meeting grief and loss in a culture that doesn't understand. So Megan Devine. And I bought this a while ago in internship. So I've had it for a couple of years on my bookshelf. And I wanted to read something different other than trauma and brain science for a second and hop back into something that is helpful. And it's really breaking my brain in the sense of perspective. And I'm glad that I'm reading it now, because I don't know that I would have been ready to fully take it in then, you know, if I'd read it when I bought it. But she was talking about, and I don't know that I'm going to be able to find it, but more or less had said that, you know, empathy. Here it is. I did find it. So she was talking about spiritual bypassing and the myth of enlightenment, and how we use spirituality or faith or religion to hide behind our pain, right? God is going to take this away. God has a plan. Everything happens for a reason. It'll all be okay. It'll work out in the end. Sometimes it won't. Sometimes it won't. And this was in the chapter talking about emotional literacy and the culture of blame, and going into religion is quick to, or faith can be quick to blame the person who is going through grief for not getting through it fast enough, for not doing it right, or having a normal, whatever normal means, reaction to a loss. Grief is the normal reaction to a loss. But she says, please know that you're not failing to be a spiritual or emotionally intelligent person because you are so upset. The fact that you're upset makes perfect sense. And your desire to bear witness to your own pain is a sign of your emotional depth and skill. Empathy, feeling with yourself and feeling with others, is the real hallmark of development. And empathy means that, to be able to understand and share the feelings of another person. And there was a video that I'd seen, which I have found. The governor of Illinois gave a commencement speech at Northwestern University. And that's what he talked about. He said, the cruelest person in the room is the one without empathy. Is also, more or less, he said, the stupidest person. Right? Empathy is growth. And so I was doing a little more research on this and I was really thinking about it. And that's what kind of spurred the blog post was empathy is evolution. So going into polyvagal theory, it was something I had dived into on how our body responds from a survival standpoint. So just to read a little bit of it and paraphrase, we are hardwired for survival through and through. All vertebrates are, which is where that survival system came from. So 500 million years ago, immobilization was the tactic of the time. And immobilization simply meaning fawn or freeze. So we are playing dead or appeasing, submitting to whatever that threat might be. Or we are freezing and more or less going into shutdown dissociation mode of whatever is happening right now, this threat I can't ward off. And so I'm just kind of collapsing on the inside. 400 million years, so another 100 million years of evolution. Our system became wired for mobilization, which is where fight or flee comes in. So now we have these four survival responses that are showing up. We can fight our way out, we can run away from whatever's happening, we can play dead, or we can collapse and go internally. It took another 200 million years after that point for social engagement to come online. And that is that part of us that connects with others, that builds empathy, that helps with caretaking. And they did some studies with like our closest primate ancestors on what that social engagement looks like. And they were able to see, well, not just the mom is taking care of the young, other people, fictive kin, are taking aunts, uncles, grandparents are helping to caretake. Humans have done the same thing. I linked a TED talk by Jeremy Rifkin about the civil, was it civilization of empathy? I might have mixed up that wording, but how he talks about that is that's what's on the horizon. That is where we're headed. Historically, empathy was only between our tribes. Everyone else, say, over the valley or over the mountain was an alien and we didn't know who they were. They were the threat. Anyone that wasn't within shouting distance was against us. And as time went on, we realized, well, we're all part of the same species. Just because you live over the mountain doesn't mean we can't be of service to each other. And we started to build on that. And he says that we're softwired for empathy or social engagement, which makes sense because it hasn't been around as long as the other hardwired parts of us. And so this was more of it was kind of self-serving, me thinking of myself a little more highly than someone who lacks empathy or has, you know, maybe some narcissistic tendencies where there's an inability to share perspective of somebody else or feelings of somebody else. So yeah, that's where that kind of came from, is something I've been thinking about for a little while.
Well, it's super important because I'm all about evolution and growth and breaking patterns so that we can evolve into a better version of ourselves. And I hear quite a few of people I work with are partnered with narcissists. And you mentioned the narcissist. And, you know, narcissists feed off of empaths because there's so much to give and they just keep getting fed. Some people in my world call it energy vampires. You know, they're just sucking the energy out of you. And you can often tell when you're around someone or a group of people and you were perfectly fine. And then within minutes or even after you're done, you just feel drained and there is nothing left for you to give. And sometimes it can show up as physical ailments and things like that. And, you know, I find that a lot of times when I'm in empathy overload, I can just weep at the, you know, anything. I can think about something or I can be around someone and the emotions just get flooded, you know. So
So narcissism, it was what came to mind because it was something I had written about here in this post, but it's a branch off of emotional immaturity, and maybe that's a better way of saying things. Emotional immaturity is a lack of emotional development, right? We get stunted somewhere in our growth, and it doesn't register. When you have people with narcissistic tendencies, that inability to see things from others' perspectives, the difficulty in being able to share emotion, connecting to emotion, there's a sense of entitlement. We're seeking validation or admiration from others, very self-centered. It's very childlike. We get stuck in that place of development, right? You see those things in a child because that makes sense. That's where they are. But when you continue to see them in adults, it can bring problems, especially in this day and age when you're raising kids with emotional intelligence and you have all of these older people that don't have it. Yes, it is a generational thing. There's a whole bunch of other stuff that goes into that. But that's why narcissism and that term has been a lot. Has been on the rise, right? It's been a buzzword lately. Oh,
Right.
he's narcissistic, she's narcissistic, always taking pictures of herself. He can't listen to anything I have to say.
Right. I often will say that empaths go into compassion overload, where we put ourselves in the other person's shoes to the point where we become them and inside of ourselves, you know, and we take on their pain and we don't allow them to feel the pain. We don't allow them to go through their process. And the thing with someone who isn't emotionally mature enough, they'll gladly let the empath do that and not think twice about it. And it's such a hard thing too, because empaths love so deeply. And so it's their way, in many ways, unconsciously, of giving love to another individual. You know, and it's easy to fall into the trap of being with somebody who is that emotionally immature and being long-suffering in that relationship, and having, that's where a lot of the tumultuous times take place and depression sets in. I know you work with clients on this too, but you know, where they can't seem to understand what has happened to them because they're just giving so much, the overgiver, if you will, and they're not getting it back. So
And again, it comes down to attachment and it comes down to boundaries. All of that is just this nice ball of things that are linked. The more we understand ourselves, the more we can look out for things in others that are serious red flags. Reminder, like, no one is going to be perfect. You're going to have some things that don't line up.
Right.
Are you willing to put up with those things, is the question. And yes, empathy. Like, if you're not able to give it back to yourself, first and foremost, acknowledge and validate what you're experiencing. then giving, then yes, like you're saying, you're just giving it away to everyone. You're depleting yourself.
One of the things that I like that you wrote about, you said, don't mistake or confuse empathy for hypervigilance. What do you mean by that?
So hypervigilance is the term of being on alert at all times. We are hyper aware of our surroundings, of people. We are constantly looking for cues in the environment, whether that's facial expressions, loud noises, body language that signals some kind of danger, because it has at some point in our life kept us safe. So if we go back to childhood, because pretty much everything stems from that, maybe there was somebody in the home who was a yeller. Well, one, loud noises. We are, again, hardwired for survival. Loud noises trigger that survival response in our brains, telling us to be alert and probably to run away. Yelling is no different. And then if we experience that person as scary, okay, do I approach you? Do I have to take a step back? Like, where are you at? And then we start learning, okay, well, if this person is scary for me and I don't know what kind of mood they're going to be in, now I'm always on guard. And maybe now I'm also interpreting non-threatening cues as threatening because my brain is hardwired for that. So that doesn't mean that we are actually attuned to that person. And that is the biggest difference. Empathy is attunement. Hypervigilance is safety.
Yeah, that's a great point to distinguish, because one of the other things that I work with people on is knowing what is yours and what is somebody else's. And it's easy with high sensitives to that are empathic to feel things even on a physical manner. I mean, I could be sitting here and all of a sudden I start to get a headache, and let's just say that you were overthinking about something and worried. Well, it could manifest as this headache. And I'm just like, wait a minute, is this mine or is this somebody else's? Right. And then you may reveal to me, yeah, you know, I've really been processing something and it's giving me a lot of distress. So I'll go, oh, okay. So it's not mine to work with. Right. And so that's one thing that I constantly remind people of is come back to, is this yours? Is something directly happened to you that may have caused that? If not, it's probably somebody else's. And very often we are also tuning into the collective field, but we're most attuned to the people we spend the most time with and that we feel the most connected to. So you start with your inner circle first. Okay. Is this my beloveds? Is this somebody that, you know, I've just spoken with and I care about and, you know, all that sort of thing? Nope. Okay. Everybody there's good. Now let me check in. What's happening in the world? And, you know, a lot of people who are highly empathic have a real hard time watching or listening, reading the news, because they just take on that pain and suffering of the world, you know.
And yes, and that is empathy, right? And I sort of chart that out in the ending, but we are heading toward that, right? Our parenting culture is waking up to kids are people. They're not simply there to be seen and not heard. We are fostering human beings who are going to grow up to be adults with their own lives. How do we want to approach that with them? We're developing their emotional intelligence. And in asking them to be emotionally intelligent, you're also asking them to be empathetic toward their peers, toward people in, you know, their community, in the world at large. We're asking for people to constantly care about the fires in Hawaii and rebuilding, the wars happening all across the globe, the genocide, the famine, the global warming that's happening. And they're doing it. And we are getting to that empathy overload, right? That compassion fatigue or burnout of I do feel so deeply. And again, going back to boundaries, if we're looking at the news too much, if we're scrolling on social media, if we have alerts coming to our phone every time a new headline comes out, maybe we need to start limiting those. It can be too much.
Yeah, that's a great reminder of some coping skills that we need to continue to practice. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day. I said, you've got all the tools, you just have to use them. And because she was talking about how she just feels so deep. She's like, when is this roller coaster going to end? And I'm like, it doesn't end. We just have to navigate it differently. We have every time it shows up, when it feels like it's taking us dark and deep, that's the time that we get to dig in and practice, you know? And then we pull ourselves back out and we strengthen that muscle, so to speak, so that the next time we can meet it even stronger and deeper. So, I'll throw out some coping stuff. I'd love for you to offer some too, but you mentioned boundaries. That's a huge one. And, I would also say that spending some time in nature or a peaceful place somewhere that allows you to just unplug and reconnect with just yourself, reconnect with, what I want to call it, the true nature of who you are versus all the noise and ridding yourself of some distraction time for a while. That's another way. What else do you say?
You mentioned riding the roller coaster. When does it stop? How do we handle it? Sometimes you have to get off and regroup before we get back on. It's okay to take time for solitude, to reflect. How can I do things better? When I go up and I'm riding this roller coaster, I get to the top. Do I want to scream on the way down? Do I want to put my hands up? Do I want to laugh? Do I want to do nothing at all? And then it's going to happen. And you're going to have to ride it out until it's finished. Again, you can get off at any time.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, attuning to you, what you need, what are your values? Who lines up with that? Who is supportive? Which places are supportive of your best self? What activities give you energy or even respite, if that's what you really need? If you're on the go all the time, can you allow yourself to rest? Positive self-talk is really helpful, especially if there's guilt around taking care of you. Women, mothers, I'm really talking to you here because that's a big deal. You feel like you're not allowed to, you don't deserve it. That's some old ingrained bullshit that some man decided to found this country on. Is work ethic and productivity is bullshit. You have to rest because your body requires it. Is it watching your favorite movie or a TV show at the end of the night? Is it listening to your dog snore or your baby sleeping? Is it painting a terrible portrait of your partner while they do the same for you? Is it responsibly using substances? Responsibly is the major word here. There's so many things, but coming back to what brings you back to you is very important. And if you don't know that, yay, self-discovery opportunity. It's a great time to figure out what you do like or don't like. Trying new things. If new things scare you, doing things you've done before, do you still enjoy them or not?
Well, keep in mind too, I'm speaking to all the overgivers out there, raising my hand. Keep in mind too, that what example are you setting for your child or for someone that you care about? You know, it's easy to give advice. It's hard to take our own, right? But you know, what example are you giving to, I would think about that. And there's some redos I'd like to have as a young parent, you know, where it's like, okay, I taught my kids to work hard and try and fill up their time with as much work and productivity, you know, as possible. And there was a point when you're a little bit older that I was like, no, wait a minute. You've worked hard. School is your job. You're allowed to have that downtime. I'm allowed to have that downtime. I don't have to. I mean, I went through the roller coaster of guilt because I worked full time. And it was like, I haven't seen them all day. I need to spend as much time as I possibly can before they go to bed with them. And that wasn't always what you needed. You know, sometimes we all just needed to have quiet. So, giving to ourselves. Also, I noticed that I can show up so much better. You know, it's a silly example, but I'm going to share it just for fun. When I planned to go back east to see Lake and Sarah and the baby, I planned it for the last week of April. Then I found out Mount Rose, where I love to ski, was staying open till the end of April. And I was like, screw it, I'm moving it. So I moved the trip a week later so that I could be with my ski friends and I could be on the mountain I love and enjoy it. I was able to show up fully present on the East Coast and not feel, I mean, yeah, I still, you know, miss home, and I feel like I'm sort of missing out from what's happening back here, but it didn't have the same grab or pull at me that it would have if I had kept the original date that I had gone. That was my way of giving to me. So, and that was a gift.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you brought that up. I'd seen a post about a mother who was caretaking for her daughter who had cancer, and some flight came available where she booked a weekend trip to Ireland. And there was some guilt there for her of, I should be there with my daughter for every moment. She's going through this thing. At the same time, your daughter's fighting the fight. You're there to support her. How much can you support her if you're burnt out from caretaking and worrying and feeling powerless and helpless? You have to replenish your cup too. Caretaking is so important, self-care is so important, especially when you're caretaking for others. If you're in a helping profession, if you're a parent, if you're taking care of your own parents. I mean, I'd even say if you're taking care of animals frequently, right? They're dependent on you.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. You get back.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's it.
I come to mind, people come into my mind where in various situations that I find myself, if I'm not careful, I can get frustrated with them because they will complain about burnout, but they won't do anything about it. And exactly what we're talking about, they feel guilty. It's like, no, what if this person dies tomorrow and I'm not there, you know? And I understand that's tragic. I mean, believe me, it's loss, grief. At the same time, the individual it's their journey. They are the ones who are doing the work. No amount of presence from another person is going to stop whatever is going to happen for that individual. But what we can do is we can offer the quality of support that that individual needs. And if we, like you're saying, if our cup is half empty, or if it's, you know, empty at all, now we're giving them sloppy seconds. We're giving them scrapings. How good is that for them? And I'm going to even throw another little, I'll call it a pebble in the oyster to create a little pearl consternation here. But how many times do we, especially empaths, get to that place and we're working with another empath? Well, guess what? We then become more of the narcissist than they do. We're not giving. Okay, let me explain. Because you have two empaths supporting, let's say one's going through a tough time, whatever, crisis and that sort of thing, and the other empath is supporting. Well, if the other empath is overgiving, then you're not trusting that the person who's walking through it has the tools and the skills to be able to do what they need to do. And you've just made it about you. Mm-hmm. Look at what I'm giving you. Look at me. I can handle this for you.
Yes. You're also touching on enabling versus accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Am I enabling your behaviors by being the one who's going to take them away from you? Whereas if I held you accountable, like you're saying, I'm holding that space for you to do your own work. And if you need me, I'll be there.
Mm-hmm.
Just know that I'm here as support.
Right. Yep. And, you know, it's that fine line of, you know, I'm giving and being of service, or now I think I'm taking over. I'm telling you, I know what's best for you. You need me here and I'm going to do this for you. And that's not always what they want or need.
Think of it, I guess, like the scenario that comes to mind is a person on their deathbed. If they want you to be there to support them as they navigate that new journey, you know, they've never been on their deathbed before, probably. If they need for you to let them go, but you keep holding on for yourself because you keep seeing signs of life, or you think they would want that for you, but clearly they're not there. They just want to let go. You're holding them back. Like you're saying, you're making it about you. It's not about you. Mm-hmm. It's about you later in your grief. But right now they're dying. And we have to respect that for them.
Yeah, that's such a hard thing, you know. Another interesting conversation I was having the other day about I'm noticing the conversations I've been having with many individuals has been the frustration and difficulty in the human experience, because they are so empathic, or because they are so in the, we'll say, light body and the, you know, the spiritual realm, that it's hard for them to understand their soul intuitively, consciously chose the human experience. You cannot negate it. We have to learn how to embrace it and work with it. And it's such a difficult place to be. But if we can take this full radical acceptance of I am fully human, and that means that part of the evolution is empathy, and that in this empathy, I can be of service to others, and I still need to give to myself. Now I can be fully human. Now I can also still be in the spiritual realm and embody the qualities of light and embody the qualities of love and all these things that we're working with. And I can radiate that into the world and be of service that way as well. So I'm not sure where I was going with that at the moment, but that's okay. It was something that came up that I just felt like I needed to share.
Okay. I think same for being a little dying tidbit, so it's fine.
Oh yeah. The dying. Well.
It's all very nuanced. Anything we're saying is not an absolute.
No.
It can't be.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, for me, death is just a gateway to liberation. And I don't say that lightly, in the sense that I'm like, oh, it's just death. I mean, I'm not trying to be dismissive about it. I celebrate that when the time comes, I will be liberated from this physical form and all the experiences that I've had, but I get to carry it into whatever's next and be of benefit into whatever's next. So that's why it's important for me to do the work now, so that it carries through, no matter what form I'm in. Why are you laughing?
I'm laughing because it spurs another thought, one that I've broached with Talbot, that all existence is servitude.
That's an interesting philosophy.
It doesn't matter if you're here on earth, right? We're serving in some way. If you're in hell, you're serving in some way. If you're in heaven, you're serving in some way. I don't think there's really any escaping it. If you're in an animal realm, you're definitely serving in some way. A ghost realm, definitely that too. I think all existence is servitude. So if that's what you're trying to get out of, good luck to you. Let me know.
See, and that's my whole, thank you. That was my whole philosophy around being of service without being the martyr. But again, the path of service to me is rewarding. The path of service to be useful. That's all. I mean, none of us are special, but we certainly are useful if we allow ourselves to be. And I think that's the thing that I just keep coming back to, is how may I serve? How may I serve? How may I serve? And sometimes being of service, this goes back to the death example. It goes back to some of these other examples we've used. Sometimes being of service is stepping away. And is filling our cup, and is getting back and reducing the burnout and getting rid of burnout, hopefully, by self-care. Sometimes that is being of service, because, well, not sometimes, it is. It is being of service, because you, like we were saying, you can show up so much better for another and for yourself. You know, at mystery school, we say our vows. I vow to you conscious speech, purity of heart, compassionate action. And then the staff takes on the vow of service. And we say those vows to each other, but we also say them to ourselves. And it was really potent for me to be able to say, to be of service to myself. I mean, in the very beginning, it's like, okay, to be of service to others, right? Be of service for all time. Yes, that's me. And when I said it to myself one day, I remember so distinctly going, wow, I need to be of service to Jamie too. Yeah. And now that's been a labor of love, because it's not easy.
Right. So I go back to the, you know, we're not pouring from our cup, we're pouring from our saucer. I have in my, think of a teacup.
Oh, yeah.
Saucer.
Yeah.
Whatever I have in my cup is for me. Whatever runneth over into my saucer, I will happily give to you.
I love that.
If there's nothing left, see ya. Honestly, I can't remember who said that. It was this beautiful woman that I watched in a video. So I took that from her.
I love it.
But it,
that reminds me of another phrase. It's sort of, we're kind of gearing it, steering this in many different directions, but we're talking about relationship and the codependency relationship factor. And the phrase was, you don't make the other person the air you breathe, you make them the flowers on your table. So you appreciate them. And I'm a big flower person. I buy myself flowers every week, and, you know, because it's just, it makes me happy, and I appreciate them, and beauty opens the heart, and they remind me to stay in my heart space. I'm not always there. I try, but, you know, when I'm not, I can look at my flowers and go, oh, take a breath in through the heart. And so, you know, we think about it from the cup and saucer thing. It's like, yeah, I have a full cup for me, and you get all the left, not leftovers, you get all the excess, all the abundance of what's in here. I love that.
Yeah. You had touched on something a little earlier. I know our time is coming to an end soon, but I chuckled to myself. It was along the lines of taking on what's not ours as empaths. And in that same vein, I would include shame. Right. Going back to childhood, hardwired for survival, we take on shame. We take on our parent shame. We take on words that are simply words that they feel about themselves, and we internalize them. And when we get to be adults, it is our responsibility to get back to ourselves, to really unravel that shame and realize it was never ours to take. As children, we couldn't do anything else. We weren't there yet.
Right.
But as adults, with our brains fully formed,
yeah,
it's a beautiful way to get back.
I love that. Yeah. And you know what? It gives me great hope that we have so many empaths out there now, that we are evolving. And so one other tool I want to offer, and I've mentioned this on previous shows and that I've been on, or that even I think on my show, but the practice of Tonglen, Pema Chodra introduced it to the West. And we practice that regularly throughout mystery school, and I practice it as well. But Tonglen is such, it's T-O-N-G-L-E-N, if anybody needs to the spelling of it. But it's a powerful tool. But one thing I will say is that using Tonglen when you're not grounded will not, I shouldn't say so absolute. I have found it hasn't worked at all. If you're not grounded, the Tonglen is basically where you're breathing in all the pain and suffering, and you're breathing out the antidote, and you do it through the heart. If the heart isn't stabilized, then you're just going to breathe in pain and suffering, and you'll start to manifest it in many different ways. And so, and it may be difficult to even access the antidote to give it out. So I say that with that warning label, get grounded first, set the interior state first before you use Tonglen.
I think my vision of the future, it looks a whole lot like the fifth element, where we're all coexisting as various species with abilities and jobs and what have you. And I think empathy is the same way. You know, I wrote at the end of it that yes, artificial intelligence is on the rise. It's going to be part of our reality in the future, but I don't think it's our entirety. We think machines are going to take over, but so long as we humans hold empathy, I don't know that that's going to be possible.
I love that. Where can people read the blog? Where can they find you?
Hopefully at some point it'll be posted on the Pathways website, which is pathwaysfcs.com. If you're in Virginia looking for a therapist and anything that I've said resonated, I'm on Psychology Today. I'm also available through the Pathways website. I haven't publicly posted my blog. I've just been sharing them with my supervisor to put on there, but maybe I'll find another place to put them.
Cool. Well, you're an amazing writer, and I look forward to the world getting to know your writing and you even more from it. So thank you for sharing this time with me. I think this is a really good, powerful subject. And thank you, everybody, for listening. You know, you can find me at jamiedawn.com, One Two Listen, and stay tuned for all the other great shows here on One Two Radio. And we'll see you when I return from mystery school. Take care, everybody.